I got that in my head now. Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes referred to as Deadweight Rob.
Deadweight Rob.
And this is our second episode, numero deux.
In our new digs.
From our new studio, which is still far from the downtown metropolis area, because we're not even anywhere near the downtown metropolis area.
Nope.
But it is still not a shack somewhere in Hoosville. That's a blessing.
No, that was scary, because you're thinking, what does this guy do with the shack when we're not there?
Oh, and we did find the Safeway.
We had quite an odyssey.
Quite a journey to find a Safeway or any of the stores when you don't know where the hell you are, which we don't, because we're outside the city in a hamlet. I'm going to say it's a hamlet.
It's a little hamlet. It's a hamlet built on the back of a giant turtle. And I think it took us about less than an hour to find the store.
When we should have been getting ready for the show.
When we should have been doing that. But we're going to go a bit late, and I drank lots of coffee, so I'm going to talk a lot.
No, I hope not. In fact, don't.
Don't. Nothing to say. Just talking.
Today, we pay tribute to another musical legend who passed away this year, and that is Burt Bacharach. It's a tough name to say when you have to say it really, like, real quick. Burt Bacharach.
Burt
say
Bacharach.
It. Say it.
Burt Bacharach.
Who died at, you're not making fun of him, but it is a tough name to say.
It is. It could be part of a those things that are hard to say.
Thank you. Oh, I wish you weren't here so many times.
The monkey could be so easy trained.
He died at the age of 94, and my mom is 93.
Oh.
Makes you think. My mom could still be writing songs and shit.
I bet you she'll be like a 95 and say, I've outlived Burt Bacharach.
Time to go. So Burt really lived a long and very eventful life. We will be reviewing his 1971 live album, Alive in Japan.
Live in Japan.
And that was not a racist comment, because if you were in Japan, that's, well, you would say it in Japanese, I would assume. But if you were asked to say it in English, you would say it like, oh, Alive in Japan.
I guess you would, yeah.
Yeah, you would. It really doesn't mean anything at all, other than I like to say it as, oh, Alive in Japan. On this episode. And Rob will also tell you about his lifelong obsession with Burt Bacharach's ex-wife, Angie Dickinson.
Ooh,
and trust me, it is an unhealthy and sometimes sickening obsession. But more on that later.
Well, I know about the age difference, but it's unimportant.
Yeah, when you were 7, oh my God, it was like, whoa. Your parents had to take you to the psychologist and everything.
Angie, you missed out.
He was a much better boy at 7, I tell you, than he is now. Angie's still alive. I don't know how old Angie Dickinson is. I guess I could have checked before the show.
Well, she was hanging out with the Rack Pack back then.
Yeah, she is a cool chick, Artie.
That's right.
From the Larry Sanders Show, he said he couldn't have Angie Dickinson on the show because he couldn't keep his hands off her.
She made him crazy.
Yeah.
She made him crazy.
And I believe it. Oh, I had such a... I'm going to tell you something. I was going to save this for later on, but I might as well put it out of the way. I had such a crush on Angie Dickinson because she was on Police Woman and everything when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And the only thing at the time I knew about Burt Bacharach was that he wrote some songs that I may or may not heard, but I was too young. But I didn't like him because he was married to Angie Dickinson.
As good a reason as any.
When you're that young, it's, yeah, it's as good a reason as any. A lot of people may have seen... did I say this last week? I don't know. But a lot of people may have seen that we had to miss an episode.
Well, that's right, yeah.
That was scheduled to be put online because of the move to the new studio.
We did mention this last week.
I did mention it last week. Yeah. I remember now, but I wrote the script like...
3 weeks ago. Maybe more.
Maybe more. But as I said last week, the missing of the episode was not my fault. This was 95% Rob's fault.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of in charge, not of the move, but of finding out what was going on in the move.
Yeah, and I was. I should have. You know, I found out the day that we were supposed to do the show that we couldn't do the show, and it came as a complete surprise to me.
Me too.
Yeah, we were like, "Whoa! How did this happen? This is your fault."
Yeah. And it falls under the area, which I won't get into too much, of nobody really thinking that that what we do is very important. When if it was something like, listen, we have to get in and to the studio and get the show done, or we lose our jobs. Oh. They would have gone over backwards to make sure that we got into
all
the studio.
We gotta do
but
is-
nobody takes anything we do seriously. If we told them how many people listen to the show and where they listen to the show, maybe they wouldn't be so...
I'm just going to start telling them the show's making us money.
Yeah.
Yeah, then they'll sit up and take notice.
By the way, it's not. Don't. You're just killing flies.
I was a mosquito there.
If you're going to do something that's a sound effect, you have to tell the audience what it is. Okay? You can't just leave it because they think I slapped you or something.
That is an elastic band snapping.
Anyways, that was one of the few times we have missed uploading an episode.
Inadvertently missed, yeah.
Yeah, since we began.
We had a pretty good
I don't actually remember. Oh, there was one time way back.
Way back, yeah.
Way back in the very, very early days.
Before we started recording the shows 5 or 6 ahead of time.
Yeah. Anyways, I did actually upload the show to a couple of... To the company that does it, but I'm supposed to also do it on Facebook, and which is where a lot of people listen to it. And I forgot. It was the one episode where it was like 3 weeks later. I said, "Oh my God, that's why." It was the Alice Cooper episode. Actually, I remember
okay.
It was. It was the Muscle of Love episode. And I said, "Oh, I forgot." And I didn't realize till 3 weeks later that there was no Alice Cooper episode up on Facebook. And it's the only time we ever... That was a mistake. This time and that time were the only times we ever missed uploading an episode. And this was on purpose, though, because we have to keep schedule.
If we had a competent producer...
We never had. Never have. Uptown Mike was a loser.
Yeah, you know, think about producers is a lot of guys who say they're producers. But they're like keyboard players back in the 80s. Well, they had the equipment, but they didn't have the knowledge.
Anyways. he just I don't know.
Like,
I think you freak people out. When
they're like
mentioned.
Monkeys that fall out of the trees.
See, you say it like you're like demented. Say things like you're like, well, I don't know, like a serial killer would.
I'm afraid that's a bit of a defense mechanism and on my part.
And if I was listening and said, you know that guy here in that podcast? He sounds like a serial killer.
Boss, you know that extra work you want me to do today?
That's what you sound like. Like I think you creep people out. Well, I'll ask people to email me later on to see if you do creep them out.
I'm sure I do.
Speaking of somebody who is missing an episode, Rob, how was your week?
My week was pretty good. I got thirsty and wanted to take a drink, but I couldn't because I had to say how good my week was.
Well, you have a lot of time to take a drink during the show when I don't.
I'll put my water down and tell you how my week was. It rained and I had to go work in the rain and I complained a fair bit, but there was no one there to listen. But I continued working and eventually it stopped raining and the work ended. And I went home and listened to the album.
So what really aggravated me today, Rob? I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounded interesting.
There was something that bugged you.
Yeah, as I was telling Rob, I had to wait for a train. And no, it's not a metaphor. I actually had to wait for a train to pick up Rob today to take him to the studio. And I hear the world-famous Piña Colada song by Rupert Holmes.
Rupert Holmes. He did a bunch of other hits, didn't he?
Well, he got kicked off the Bill Needle show, if anybody remembers that. because Bill Needle thought that he was advocating underage drinking by average.
There's some other stuff he was advocating in that song, too.
So Bill Needle, who, by the way, kicked off everybody on his show, kicked off Rupert Holmes. He also kicked off Chuck Mangione because thought Chuck Mangione, that song that he loved, which was Feels So Good, he actually thought it was the Love Boat theme. He wanted the Love Boat theme. So, and he also got mad because you know how Chuck Mangione dresses with the hat and everything.
And the long beard.
Like you get off my show, hippie. And
it doesn't look respectable.
I can't remember. It was a woman he kicked off his show too. I can't remember.
It wasn't Anne Murray.
No. Nobody kicks Anne Murray off their show. I'm trying to remember now, and it really bugs me. The woman.
She was a country singer, wasn't she?
I don't know.
Okay,
don't. We could look. We would have, if we had a producer, he would look this up for us.
Yeah, and he'd like pass us a note, and we'd, oh, that's what. And then we did the show go on uninterrupted, like we know what we were talking about. But we don't have a producer.
We don't have a producer, and we never did like that. So, what? I wasn't really listening to the song today, but then, I don't know, for some reason.
You decided to listen to the lyrics.
I was kind of excited because the train was slowly moving past, and finally, you can see that break where you're about to go, and I was kind of excited, so I said, oh, let's hear what's happening in the song, and these lyrics really bugged me. I mean, the lyrics in a whole song bugged me, because it's stupid.
Yeah.
But,
the whole ride over here.
Rob heard about it. He heard a lot about it. The line is, that's not it. It's in the verse.
Yeah, it's in the verse. It's not in the chorus.
It's in the verse. Oh, yeah. I hate this. Oh, so. And then, it was my own lovely lady. And she says, oh, it's you. And then we laughed for a moment. And I said, long pause. I never knew. So, and that leads into, I never knew that you liked piña coladas. When you actually listen to this, it's awkward, and songs, and especially top 40 songs, should flow. And this was like he's saying, you know, so my own lovely lady, and she said, "Oh, it's you." That's a fucking terrible line. That's a fucking terrible. Excuse my language, but that's a terrible verse. To start off with. And she said, oh, it's you. And that for some reason, they laughed for a moment. Oh, it's you. Oh.
You were going to cheat on me. I was going to cheat on you.
I know. Right? Okay. And then we laughed for a moment. And I said, and there's this huge pause. And I don't know if people notice it, but I noticed it big time when I was listening today. And I've heard this song, unfortunately, like 800 million times since it's been released. And he goes, I never knew. Oh, it's you. I never knew. I can't believe such bullshit gets even past the writing stage, let alone I'm going to make a demo to listen for you past that stage to the stage where it gets recorded.
Yeah,
it gets past that stage to the stage where they say it's going to be a single. Oh, it even gets past that stage to the stage where it becomes a hit single.
Some record company guy had to approve that.
Everybody had to approve that. They had to say, you know what? Those are bad lyrics. But all the other stuff is just mediocre. So you know what? It makes it okay.
Now is the right time for bad lyrics.
It was my own lovely lady, and she said, oh, it's you. Then we laugh for a moment. Oh, fuck, that pisses me off. Gets me mad. I'm actually going. And I said, I never knew. That is the dumbest thing that I have heard.
You've heard this song a million times, and you never fully because it's
first of all, when it first came out, I didn't write songs. When it first came out, like in the 1979,
back then it was just an aggravating song, but you couldn't pin down why.
I couldn't pin down why. I just thought that it was dumb, and I don't actually think I've listened to it since I've been writing songs in 1984. It has maybe come up once or twice or three times, but only in background.
You were trapped in a car with it.
And I was trapped in a car with it. And I actually missed, as I see the other lyrics to this song, they're not good. They're mediocre. They're not bad like that. Okay, since we started this, Rob, I might go on this. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to forget about the segment we had today, and I'm going to talk about this.
Because this is aggravating. This is, you got to get this off your chest, or you're going to go crazy.
I got to talk about this. He writes, I didn't think about my lady. I know that sounds kind of mean.
Well, I decided to cheat on her. And, you know, she hadn't really done anything to me. I was tired of her.
I mean, when you really think of it, seriously, take away the kind of the music that makes you kind of forget about the lyrics and kind of like, oh, man, I'm really relaxed and I sure would like a pina colada type of thing. Take that away. Now, the guy thinks he's, cheating on his wife. And he says, you know, I didn't think about my lady. Well, I know that kind of sounds mean, doesn't it?
You know, I put her out of my mind and got on with the business of doing what I would do.
And then he gives a but, me and my old lady. Well, we'd fallen into the same old dull routine, so it's okay.
It was the 70s. It was a different time.
That's, you know what? I would have appreciated it if he said something like that. I really would. If he would have said something, but it was the 70s. Like, he's not... First of all, to say something stupid, and all this is extremely stupid. All these lines are extreme. Frank Zappa was right when people say, you know, love songs I don't write because people write them stupid. To say that cheating on your lady, the worst thing that you can say is that's, well, I guess it sounds kind of mean. I don't know.
It might sound mean to you, but it's actually not.
No, because you know why?
It just sounds that way.
You know why? Because we're in this dull routine, and I think she understands that if I cheat on her, it'd be okay because it was kind of dull.
She'll never understand because she'll never find
it. So, of course, he wrote to the paper. So I wrote to the paper, took out a personal life. See, it is very catchy. You know, other ways. It's just that he's singing stupid things. He's saying things that people wouldn't say. You know how that bugs me, Rob, when people don't say things that is realistic. Mm-hmm. And you don't say, I didn't think about my lady. I know that sounds kind of mean. People don't say that. They say, fuck, I shouldn't have done that. That was, you know, I'm thinking about this, cheating on my wife. And how fucked up is that? People don't say, you're kind of mean, man.
You're just one of the guys. We won't tell any of the wives.
But it's okay. It's just a dull routine. Nobody speaks like that. And I don't... People say, yeah, but it's a song and it's got a rhyme. Well, first of all, it doesn't have to rhyme. And second, you could rhyme it a lot better than that bullshit. And Rupert Holmes went on to write many popular songs on Broadway and movies. And it's not like Pina Colada was just the one song that he wrote. It's the one song he only had a hit with as a solo artist. But he wrote, I'm not going to look up all the other songs. Maybe I should. Because I've eliminated the other segment, I'm going to have a Rupert Holmes...
I'd like to find out what he did because I thought he was a
burning him at the stake segment.
Let's make this son of a bitch pay.
Okay. So then he wrote, so I wrote to the paper and I took out a personal ad. What a fucking slime ball. And though I'm nobody's poet, again, this is not something you say.
You said it, brother.
I thought it wasn't half bad. The more I listen to this, I'm getting really mad. Because if I would have wrote any one of these lines, I would have said, oh, I would have thrown them out so quick. You know,
it's like he came up with a chorus and then had to write some lines to match
I think the chorus is not half bad.
The story to match the chorus.
It says, and I like being a goddess. Oh, this is the ad.
No.
Okay, this is the ad. I forgot about that. This is the ad where he goes, well, I like piña coladas, baby. I put in the baby because it makes it really cool.
Yeah, and he didn't know that.
He didn't know that. He wouldn't know what cool if a big penguin hit him in the head.
He wouldn't know cool if he smoked cigarettes.
I don't get that one. Okay, and getting caught in the rain. I don't understand why getting caught in the rain is a thing you like. Again, now that I listen to it, now that I actually read it,
yeah,
that's
we're
a
living
fucked
in the
up
days
line.
Of cell phones. You've got in the rain, you're buying a new
Why phone. Do you like it?
Like getting caught in the rain. Like getting caught in the rain. Ah, it reminds you of
I'm not much into health food. That's okay. I'm not either. Fuck it. I am into champagne. That sounds arrogant. I like champagne, and if you don't, fuck you. I've got to meet you by tomorrow noon and cut through all this red tape.
Cut through all this red tape. Okay, now that's bad poetry.
That's bad poetry, because you know what's coming up, right? That's why the word's red tape. Now, this may sound mean to you people, but I think I was meant to hear this song today to comment. Like, I do believe that, because we have had so many strange coincidences on this show, it would boggle the mind. And then he goes, I cut all through. What red tape is it? I know what he means. But red tape kind of means like it's a business thing that...
Yeah, it means there's others interfering with what you're doing. And that's not the case here.
Stupid. And so we'll meet at a bar called O'Malley's. I'm not going to give you an address, though. I'm just going to call it O'Malley's.
Come on, O'Malley's. You know where it is.
You know where it is, At a bar called O'Malley's where we'll plan our escape. I don't know... You haven't even met this woman yet, and yet let's plan our escape.
Let's
he
get
doesn't
together
say
and
maybe
run away.
We'll plan our escape. He says we will plan our escape. So he's already ditching his wife without even meeting this other
and
woman.
She's looking for a fellow who's ditching his wife. These two deserve each other.
She doesn't know that, though. He didn't say, like, in his ad. That's all he said in his ad. He didn't say, hey, you know my ball and chain?
Oh, he doesn't let on that he's not
saying.
Okay.
So I'm going to, you know what I'm going to check here? Because I'm on a Rupert Holmes kick right now. I think I'm supposed to do this. I really do. I'm not joking about that. There are things that come up where I really think that I'm supposed to do it. And that happened today on my trip over here. Rupert Holmes, composer. Composer, my ass. Rupert Holmes is 76. Holy smokes. Did I tell you about the time we got kicked off the Bill Needle show?
You did? You most certainly did.
He was recording as early as 1969. And yeah, we're not doing a Rupert Holmes album.
No.
Not in any way. By the way, seems like he's a self-hater. Because he changed his name from Rupert Holmes from his original name of David Goldstein. Sounds like he's ashamed that he's Jewish, which he shouldn't be.
Rupert?
That's terrible.
Well, changing it to Rupert.
That's a terrible thing to say. I didn't mean that. I'm just trying to look at the songs. I know a lot of people probably turned this off because they expected more from this show today getting mad at Rupert Holmes. We are reviewing the Birkback Rack album in about 3 minutes. So just let me get on this. He released a lot of freaking albums. Holy smokes.
The Phoenix Lana song was in the 70s, so it fits. It qualifies. We can talk about it.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. He's worked on...
TV shows?
Star is Born. What the hell is Star is Born? Oh, yeah. He actually wrote... he worked on the Star is Born a little bit. The Barbara Streisand, version. Okay. Yeah. And he did the voice for the Christmas Raccoons, in case you're wondering. Yeah, I remember Rupert Holmes from the fucking Christmas Raccoons. And I think this is a porno movie he did. Memories Within Miss Aggie. That sounds like a porno movie.
Memories Within Miss Aggie.
That definitely sounds like a porno movie. So he did do some porno, and I guess he wrote the music for the porno movie. Another porno movie. It sounds like that he did some or a theater show. He did some. It was the Hamburger Hamlet. That was an old thing he did in the 70s when he'd go, I'm dating this woman, and tonight I'm going to give her the old Hamburger Hamlet.
Hamburger Hamlet. If she was going to give you the Hamburger Hamlet, that would be like a meal.
But when you give a woman a hamburger, well, it means a totally different thing.
Yeah, it's still something that goes in the mouth, but...
Okay. Yes, you crossed the line, buddy. You crossed the line. Okay, we're going to go off that kick because...
Well, I'm not coming back.
I don't want to listeners...
We're going to get carried away. We get carried away.
You know what? We got carried away. Rob got carried away. I didn't. And I was crazy. I apologize for Rob.
I'm not getting better.
I actually should maybe have done this segment today, but it can wait.
Well, the heck with that segment. It's coming. We have plenty of weeks.
So Bert, and I like his name, Bert Freeman Bacharach.
Yeah.
I like that. If I had a boy,
maybe.
I would call him Freeman. I don't know whether it'd be his first name or his middle name, but I would call him that. And if you say that I wouldn't, I would call you a liar.
Okay. You get along with great with my son, Demon Brother.
Oh, I know people. I struggle. Yeah. I struggle with him, but
it goes on and on.
Now, Bert Bacharach was everything. He was a composer, songwriter, record producer, pianist, and is widely regarded as one of the most important and influential figures of 20th century popular music. Definitely, I have no qualms about that. Especially when you, oh my God, during the last month, when I've had to look up his
record,
his information over and over again. Because, well, we had a break.
Good long break.
But starting in the 50s, he composed hundreds of pop songs. Many of them, of course, in collaboration with lyricist Hal David. The Bacharach and David thing are just, wow. Bacharach's music, it's tough to categorize. They try and categorize it here in what I'm reading.
Yeah.
But it has, it is right when it says, and this is very right, it has unusual chord progressions, which it does. I know Rob would probably notice that right away. And time signature changes, which I love. I have to admit, if there's one thing that when I listen to like a Bacharach David song and I'm listening to this album, it's always, first of all, going from what he's playing into something that, whoa, that's weird. Not weird as in that's weird, but weird in as that's really good.
And
that's
unexpected. Unusual change
chord progression
you don't hear anymore.
And the time signature, which I really love. And I'm going to bring up a little bit more of the little idiosyncrasies in a Bert Bacharach arrangement and when we review the album. But it is jazz. Yes, it is easy listening. I don't like the word lounge pop.
I don't call it jazz. I refuse to call it jazz.
I don't think it's jazz. I think it has. They say it has jazz. It's influenced by his background.
It can be influenced by jazz, but it differs from jazz in that the jazz in my mind involves
squeaking and squawking,
improvisation, squeaking and squawking. That's what we used to call it back in the army.
We just make fun of jazz because it's so easy. We actually, I said this before, but a couple of my favorite all-time albums, like in my top 20, are jazz albums. It's just like the other 80% of the jazz that I don't like is squeaking and squawking.
Squeaking and squawking. Grimmy sick, you say something. Don't just squeak and squawk.
And there's just the numbers on Bert Bacharach is just like over 1,000 different artists have recorded Bacharach songs. You know how much money that is? That's the first thing that comes into my mind. Is you know how much money that is?
I got the funny thing. Is that more than Bob Dylan?
That's a good question.
Because he's the only other guy I know who's been recorded.
That's a good question. I might have to look that up. Not today, because that would be too much time.
Too much time. Yeah, we've already pina colada'd.
We did too much time with the pina colada things. And but his muse as far as who sang his Bacharach and David songs was Dionne Warwick, and she did an amazing job on everything that they gave her. She just blew it out of the park. I only can think of Dionne. I know Dusty Springfield did like What the World Needs Now is, and she did another song and. But I always think of Dionne Warwick. That's all I think about when I think of Bert Bacharach songs. Here's some singers. Gene Pitney. Gene Pitney did a great song, which is on this album. Unfortunately, way too short. Well, I can't remember. 20 Hours to Tulsa. Is that what the one?
Yes, that's part of the medley.
Yeah, I love that song. Like I said, Dusty Springfield, Tom Jones. He did What's New Pussycat?
What's New Pussycat?
Wow. You like that? You like that, listeners? BJ Thomas, of course. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And so many, just so many. I can't even go and tell you all the top 100 songs because it would just be boring. A legend. And I originally didn't like him because he dated Angie Dickinson.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And you know what the great thing?
It seems a petty thing now.
It's a petty thing. It seems like it now. But in the late 70s, when you're 11, it's a serious thing.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of other women to compare her to. You don't realize there's more fish in the sea.
You think that's the only woman that's around, and her and Farrah Fawcett, and she's married to that idiot Lee Majors.
Yeah,
you know, man, geez. And he's got bionic parts.
I hope they get divorced.
You know what? They got divorced, and it didn't even matter. She still didn't pick me.
Yeah.
Maybe because I was so much younger.
What was wrong with her?
Anyway, it's not going to go into too much. He started writing with Hal David and giving songs in the Brill Building, which, of course, Tin Pan Alley. You wrote three songs a day. They expected that kind of thing. But, man, I just can't believe the songs. And these songs, at least musically, but I like Hal David's lyrics because I was reading some lyrics to some of the songs on this record. And some of them are really funny. Like, they're really kind of like, I don't know what the word is. Almost contemptible of Top 40. Yes, it would make Top 40. And, but it's the music to me that is really adventurous and offbeat and yet commercial. And
yeah.
To be able to do that takes brilliance. And one of the strange things is that he decided, and of course you're making gazillion dollars just by writing these songs. All you have to do is, you know, stay at home and maybe get the lyrics from Hal David and write the song, you know, and you're making a gazillion dollars. But he's a guy that said, you know what, I want to present these songs in my own way by releasing my own albums, which is really strange for a songwriter, like just a songwriter, and to make concerts, to go to concerts and tour around. And not only is that difficult, but you go from being an exalted songwriter to maybe falling on your ass as a performer or as a record maker. And so it's a risk. Obviously, anytime you put yourself out there, it's a risk. And the thing I like, among the other things that I've mentioned about Burt Bacharach, was if you've ever seen Burt Bacharach, first of all, he's got these matinee looks, right? He's got these matinee kind of Hollywood type looks when you see him. But when he's like playing music, and I remember this because if you go on YouTube, there's like only one show that I know of that's on YouTube, and it was a show he did in the In Concert series in Edmonton, a nice city, I hear, in 1977. And I saw this when it was first aired, and it wouldn't be a show because, first of all, I was really young, but it wouldn't have been a show. And it's still on YouTube. Like, you can get it on YouTube. It's not in great quality or fantastic quality, but it's on YouTube. And it's pretty much the show that you see, that you can see, that was on this album that we're doing, this Live in Japan album, actually called In Concert also. And he looks extremely goofy. And I don't mean his facial looks, I mean like
his body posture.
His body. And that I remember distinctly. And I might have been working on homework or something, or doing something else, because that's what I do now. That's what I've been doing for like all my life, is that I put on a TV. And I might occasionally watch it, but I've got something else to do. That's how I write songs.
Is that, yeah, you
I
always need that have kind TV of thing on in the background.
Yeah, to that. Kind of, it's kind of creepy to write just in complete silence.
Silence, yeah.
So we always have something going on in the background. I know this was on because I know I watched it because it was my first impression of Burt Bacharach. And I watched it and I was going like, and he's kind of like, he moves awkward on the piano. You know, and he's kind of geeky, But he's not a geeky looking guy. Like, he's got this matinee idol looks, but he looks exactly how a song, like he acts exactly how a songwriter who should stay a songwriter. Like you see in all the Hollywood movies where the guy goes, I got a song for you. And then he goes to Judy Garland, come here and hear the song. And then he sings
over
the song.
He leans over the piano. Like that guy on Reefer Madness.
And he plays like he's got some problems. Yeah, you're right. He plays like he's got some problems. And he doesn't sing it well because he's a songwriter, not a singer. And then you see this in television shows and all the old movies and with the songwriters, because that's what they used to have. You know, songwriters wrote songs, usually two guys.
And the performer was the one.
And the performer would perform it.
Songs to do, yeah.
They didn't do the same thing. If you got a writing credit and you were a singer, you were like the fourth person on that song. So he looked at, when I saw him, I said, wow. And then I heard him sing like, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. I remember watching it and seeing it. I said, oh, this guy can't sing. This guy is like a songwriter. But what guts to go out there and say, I can't sing. I can't sing worth shit.
I'm going to do this song now.
But I'm going to do this song. And he doesn't do a lot. He only does two or three songs that he sings in a show. And either the girl singers sing it or it's instrumental. But I like that. I remember I kind of, my whole perception of Burt Bacharach as a young boy turned around to, you know, this, I like that he's kind of, in a way, making a fool of himself, making himself look awkward so that he can present his music.
Yeah, the way he wants it.
Way he wants it to, or in his own way, because probably the way that Dionne Warwick is still the way that he would like it. But, oh, what if I did it the way I really want it to be done as far as artistically is concerned? And that's what I really liked about it. Yeah, he's awkward. Yeah, he moves kind of like you got to see that. Please watch that YouTube special from the In Concert in Edmonton, because it looks, he's like, wow. He's like, this guy is a songwriter that all of a sudden thinks he can have a whole concert by himself, but he can. He has this endearing quality of, I don't know, kind of like a deer in the headlights. Like, he shouldn't be up there, but he is.
Yes.
He has a right to be up there. He wrote the songs. And that's what I've always liked about Burt Bacharach. And then he released a bunch of albums in the 70s up until like 1979. And then he didn't release anything for like 20 years. And maybe because the albums weren't selling well, and maybe people just didn't want to listen to Burt Bacharach as a solo type of artist, that he kind of gave it up. But it was Elvis Costello who got him back and wanted to do an album with him. And I could see Elvis Costello wanting to work with Burt Bacharach. It's like, I would say, you know, this kind of guy writes the songs I like. They're very dramatic. They got nice chord progressions.
He doesn't pick his chords like the other kids.
Yeah.
Do. He's different.
Yeah. And I think that's what Elvis Costello liked. I know that. I don't even have to look it up. And that's what it would intrigue me. But I remember when that happened, when they did get together for that in the late 90s. And I said, that's a perfect combination, because you got both guys who look for strange chord progressions.
Yeah.
And are looking for the off, out of the box type thing.
They are not on the middle of the road there, even though
right.
The style can sound like it, but it's just, it's not like other songs.
You know what I'm going to do, Rob? I kind of went through my biography and everything. I'd like you to review this first. I just want to say, before this, I let you go, is that the history of this album is kind of strange.
I couldn't find too much information on this.
It's very little information.
It wasn't even listed on the Wikipedia there.
Now, I'll just tell you, before I let Rob actually tell about the album. This album was released only in Japan, and it was recorded in Japan, obviously. It says Alive in Japan, right? I'm sorry. If I'm offending anybody, I'm just joking. But if I'm offending, I'm sorry. But I like to say,
I love when you do your Chinese weatherman. It's laning.
Okay, that'll get some email for us. Thank you very much, Rob. Okay, where was he doing his broadcast from? From a cleaning place, Rob? Idiot. So, idiot. So,
ancient Chinese secret.
So it was released only in Japan, nowhere else. which actually was a very common practice. Bob Dylan did it with his At Budokan record, and it became so popular as an import, they had to release it in North America the next year. First Bob Dylan album I ever bought. Love it. Cheap Trick did it. They released their At Budokan album only in Japan. Became so popular as an import, had to be released in North America. And of course, has become one of the greatest selling live albums of all time. It seems to happen. It seems if you release a really good album in Japan, it doesn't just stay there. People talk, you know, and that's how it gets to be that way. So this album was released in 1971, and then they decided in 1974 to release it not worldwide. It seems to be only in Europe. But that's a confusing thing. Now, I know this may not sound interesting to some people. I find it interesting, because what I found out from going to the Discogs website was that it wasn't released in America in 1974. And by that time, they called it the album Live in Concert instead of Live in Japan.
Because no one's going to buy an album recorded in Japan.
Well, I won't listen to a Japanese record. Man, it's talk about digging your own hole over and over again. I don't have any information that it was released in America or Canada. The only thing that I found, now this has to be a mistake, because the only thing I found from Canada was a cassette. Now, if you're releasing a cassette of an album, there's for sure you're releasing an album.
There's got to be vinyl.
There's got to be vinyl. They just haven't found one, I think. They just haven't somebody who's actually just told them about it. Because that happens on Discogs, too. They're not infallible. They will only do something that they know about, for sure. So if nobody has presented them with a title, then they won't say it's been released on an album. So that has got to be a mistake. But I don't have any proof that that it was released in America, which is really strange. It could have been, but usually if it's released in America, album or otherwise, they don't miss that, because those, of course, sell the most in the world.
Yeah, and this is Burt Bacharach.
Yeah, so I don't think it was. And then the next release goes all the way to the compact discs. So this is not a widely heard album, which is surprising to me. This is not a widely heard album. This is an album that has really only been released three times. And once was only in Japan, once was in Europe and Canada, and all the way like 20 plus years, 30 plus years later, or finally around the world in compact disc form. So I just wanted to release that information before we get to the album review. And on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Rob, who I think just hated this album so much. I can't believe he hated it so much. Anyways, take it away, Rob.
It's a strange hidden album. It's like you had to search for it.
I'm glad I picked it. I'll tell you why I picked it. Is just because it had... It goes back to that 77 TV special. And I just thought that was the best way to represent... to show his hits done by him. And what better way than to play all these hits together? Because we can't do greatest hits albums, right? We put all these hits together, but his way, instead of having an album where he had in the 70s he had no hits, basically. And if they were just on a soundtrack of one song. So how am I supposed to be representative of Burt Bacharach? Oh, thank God he released a live album. Let's do that. So that's why the live album, because all his hits were 50s, 60s with Bacharach and David. Anyways, go ahead, Rob.
Okay, for the third time, I'm going to go ahead.
Sorry, man. I got a lot of information on here, so I just wanted to bring it out.
And I know you will torture yourself if you don't get that information out, because I do the same.
I know, I will.
That'd be crazy.
Because when I think of it, if I don't say it, then I might forget it.
All right. Halfway through my second listen to this album, I wrote down my first comment. I'm Burt Bacharach. I have a lot of great songs. I don't have time to play them all the way through. Here's some short versions without lyrics. Hope you enjoy. I'm Burt Bacharach.
What's that mean?
It means a lot of these songs I recognize, but without the lyrics, they were short medley-type versions.
Some of them. I don't know, but what I mean by... No, I don't know what you mean is... I don't know what you mean if that is a bad thing, if you're making fun of him, or if you're saying, no, this is just reality.
This is just reality.
Oh, okay.
This is what he did. This to me is like... I was listening to the album, and... all the songs... Well, a lot of songs I recognized... Didn't so much recognize. It was like I was listening to them, and I was like, have I heard this song before? But then they would go into the next change, or we'd go to the next part, and I'd be humming along with it, and I'd hum the next part. So clearly, I had heard this song before, but had no conscious memory of it. And
see, but this
happened on multiple songs.
This is not meant for the, I'm stumbled upon this guy called Burt Bacharach. This is like if you're a real Burt Bacharach fan, you're going to get like... one of his albums, because if you're just a casual fan, you're going to get a Dionne Warwick album. You know what I mean? So it's not.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
So that's why being instrumental, it's like I'm not. Maybe I'm misinterpreting what you're saying, but what I'm trying to say is that this is meant for the people who know all the songs because they're Burt Bacharach fans.
Exactly.
Right.
You're defending a thing I'm not attacking yet.
But I will.
Yet. I had to throw the yet in there. I had a hard time wrapping my head around the whole concept of what he was doing. And that, as you mentioned before, you said that some people regard this as related to jazz. And I said, no, it's not. Absolutely not. Because jazz, in my mind, involves improvisation. And I did not hear any improvisation here. If it took place, I didn't hear it. It missed me.
No, you don't have improvisation in an orchestra-type environment.
No, these songs are played the same way each time they're on stage. And that's the part I can't wrap my head around. I could never do that. I mean, even growing up, I knew that, if I was a musician, I died and went to hell, I'd be playing songs the same way every time.
Like Journey songs?
Yeah, the same way every time. No deviation.
And to make a point, you did.
That was my idea.
You have done that.
No, because I always left little parts in the song where I could...
were in a couple of bands that, in a way, did that.
They would do that for some songs. Like, sometimes you'd play an AC/DC song. And
didn't do it for, like, a whole show.
No, it was never a whole show. It was just an occasional song.
Because we... Well, you know that our band, which is of course miles above any other band, we always went by the motto of this is how the form goes, and however happens when we start the song, I guess it's a very Grateful Dead approach to it. Basically, it has a beginning, yeah. But how it ends is totally up to us.
The simple form was a fallback form,
right?
If we weren't as inspired as we normally are, we could just get through the song like that. But still.
Exactly. But basically, we were allowed to put an imprint
parts,
on almost every
sometimes
song.
Sometimes you get louder or softer. Or sometimes you could play the song a little faster or slower.
Now, there is, as you pointed out, I'm just agreeing with you. There is no leeway in this music.
Yes.
And you realize why, though, right?
It's unimportant to me why.
Well, it is kind of... Well, maybe...
It's important to you, and maybe other people. It's unimportant to me.
Can I just say why it's important?
Sure.
Because everything has to be done exactly like the arrangement, because there's so many instruments, and it has to be... Everybody has to play it, so many bars, so many things. So it has to be done exactly the same way for every concert. It's not... If you're for certain types of music, it's not a bad thing.
Yes, classical music is a good example.
Yes,
classical music don't deviate because you might have a solo with maybe the clarinet having a solo somewhere, but it's still a pre-rehearsed kind of solo.
You could even say to somebody, you can do your clarinet solo. Let's say you're Burt Bacharach, so you can do your clarinet solo, but you better wrap it up in 12 bars.
Yeah. The time limit's definitely there. But like I say, I heard no improvisation on this one.
I totally agree with you.
And
there can't be.
No, there can't be.
Even for people like us who are totally go by no form, not no form, but we just have a form, and then every song, however it turns out, is how it, sometimes it goes really good. Sometimes it can be so good you're not even touching the ground. Yeah. Seriously, I've had that. We've had that moments where we're actually transported out of our body. That's why we love it so much. And then there's moments where you feel like you're walking in mud because it just doesn't work sometimes. And some nights
you ain't getting the sound.
Even us who live by that creed, we do understand why this music has to be played like that, regimented like that.
Yeah, I'm not denoting a lack of understanding. I'm just saying, when I was young, and even to this day, if I had to play things the same way every time, that would be my version of musical hell.
So you would have trouble with Burt Bacharach?
Being in his orchestra? Yes, I do.
You would cause that trouble. You would cause trouble.
What being in hell was like is like, why do I have to be alive to be in hell? Why can't I just kill myself and be in the real hell?
So you would cause trouble in Burt Bacharach's band is what I'm saying.
No, because if I was paid very well, I'd have trouble.
Okay, so I guess you're kind of like a whore.
Yes. I went to school to study to be a whore. And if someone offers me enough, I'll do the thing they want done. So far, no one's ever offered me anything. The issue has never come up.
So far, so good, eh?
So far, so good. That thing I spent 3 years training for, never done it.
So we got your point on this one.
Now, having said that, I really enjoyed listening to this album. I very much enjoyed it. It's like a lot of the strengths of it, because the things he was playing, the shorter medley type versions, they didn't belabor the point. They weren't too long to get across what was happening. And also, his writing is just so damned interesting.
It is.
The way it flows and the way it's layered.
Even instrumental, don't you think?
It does not leave you bored.
Even ever. Instrumental. And I find that fascinating. In fact, I'm not going to say it's better. I'm not. And that's not what I'm saying, is that the instrumental is better than when it's sung, but it's just as interesting because you get to hear the chord changes and you get to hear the actual how the song goes instead of being entranced by like Dionne Warwick's vocal.
Yeah, the voice can...
Yeah, because Dionne Warwick can just sing it and you go, oh my God, that's such
God,
a great
she's
voice.
She's good.
She's good. And you totally kind of put the music in the back of your head instead of the front. Well, you actually get to hear the music and you go, wow, this is incredible music for music's sake.
Yeah, I didn't recognize this song. The other thing is it felt also a bit like having a radio playing in the background, the length of the songs, and that you quickly get reminded of a song and you kind of enjoy it, and then it blends into the next. It doesn't go jarringly into the next, it just blends into the next. It's mm-hmm. really cool, but... I listened the first time and I thought I wasn't going to like it, and I was kind of intrigued, and then by about the third or fourth listen I was like, geez, I like listening to this. I shouldn't, and I do. And that's all I have to say about Bert. Except Bond Street was my favorite.
Yeah, it is. I
liked of course a bunch of the other ones. What's the second last song? I thought that was a really strong finish. But he doesn't finish that. After that, he does a 2 minute What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love.
Okay, he does the Promises, Promises. Is that what you're thinking of? Promises, Second Promises, loss. Promises, Promises.
Yes.
I love
big,
that song.
Big, strong finish.
I love that. If you look at the lyrics, it's really cool.
Like Hal David's lyrics. For about half a minute, and then he comes out and does the encore. And
he
like,
always does that. I did read, of course, I did a lot of background, as I do with everybody, and he loved to begin his concerts with What the World Needs Now is Love as a intro, and then to end his concerts. It's a nice way to end your concerts, What the World Needs Now is Love. And he would always end that also while playing a song as he does here in his full version, which is an amazing version. That was a very good review, Rob. I love this album. I have to admit. First of all, I want to say... the sound is one of the greatest sounding. And, you know, I've heard... way too many live albums in my day, because I've heard so many 70s albums in particular, and 70s were the live album decade.
Yeah.
And I've heard many, 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 way too many live albums.
Because live albums in the 80s and 90s were just released because they felt they had to.
And they hardly ever make them anymore at all. In fact, from the 90s till now, we hardly have any live albums. This is utterly mind-blowingly good sound. This is...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And I think, Rob, that's where you get this smooth thing.
The balance is...
Yes, the balance is just perfect on everything. And we got a record next week. Well, 2 weeks for you people. But next week, that I'm going to tell you the difference of when things aren't balanced. But this is so balanced that, my God, I was stunned just by the... clarity of everything.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is the sound guy and the production, but a lot of it is also the musicianship and these people are very professional.
These people are very good. I don't know. I would have to watch that concert special from Edmonton to actually see if they actually lower their instruments, because that's so fucking difficult to do. Like it's
there
fading
were parts where they did,
or whether they did out. That. Or whether they did that way. But I'm kind of thinking that the musicians actually faded them out themselves.
Yes, because there's at least one part on here where I heard a fade out. It wasn't a full fade out. Whoa. It was a fade down at the end of the song.
I've never heard that before.
And they all did it the same. Like, there's no way the sound man had his fingers on 10
sliders. I can't hear
it.
I would be able to hear that. With our experience of many, many years, we would be able to hear...
The
it
difference
being
between
lowered,
a mechanical and then electronic,
And every song, I said, I don't think it, like, I can't see how they do it, but there's no way they lowered that with knobs. There's just no way.
No, I mean, the classical, the old Italian nomenclature for all the louder, softer, I think it's about 8 or different levels it has there. You know, you get professional musicians. Yeah, they get trained to play all those different levels. And I never paid much mind to it because
you see, not being in
playing
that,
rock and roll.
Oh yeah,
you're mostly the top three levels.
You see, but you don't get to hear that. Like you say, we're in rock and roll. You don't get to hear that being done, and that's why it makes it so awe-inspiring. Is because it's not just a matter of fading it out. Everything has got to be the same while you fade it down.
It's almost, there was someone we reviewed, and I knew that they had an orchestra and a conductor just by listening to it. Because there was no way that the changes could have happened for a whole band spontaneously. I can't remember who that was, but...
I've never heard this. Have you ever heard this being done before? Other than, like, at school or something? Have you ever heard, like, on a record... obviously a live record, like it being lowered by the band?
No, I've never heard it done without a conductor.
Okay.
Only ever orchestras doing it.
Well, this is what they're doing.
I mean,
it's basically a band with an orchestra.
Can do it, but when rock bands do it, it's sloppier.
I've never heard a rock band do it. Like, I've heard them, of course, we do it. We go soft, but then we go back into it. We never go soft to the point of we're done.
No.
Fade it.
Let me think of some rock songs where they kind of fade out and fade back in.
No, but that's live.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody do this. I've never heard a rock band go all the way down to the point where it's...
No, I've heard them bring it down. But like I say, they do it in a... They're not as tight when they do it as these guys are.
Yeah. I may have heard it, but I don't remember hearing it before. And it just kind of like was, wow. And I know Brokeback Wreck. I know 90% of these songs. And you're right. He plays them just the right length.
Yep.
Even knowing the song, especially with an instrumental, you can't get away with playing it for like 4 or 5 minutes. Some songs you can, like they do, What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. Works really good for the 5 minutes. You got to know. See, that's the brilliance of this. First of all, his arrangements are brilliant. His conducting is brilliant. And he knows the length that his songs have to be. And that's not easy. It sounds easy, but it's not. He knows exactly how long it should be. And he even has that great medley in the middle with 24 Hours from Tulsa and What's New Pussycat, Anyone Who Had a Heart, which I thought was one of the highlights. Oh my God, I love this album. I really liked it on first listen. And I kept getting attracted back to it because it was not only soothing... to me. It was not only soothing, but it was intellectually stimulating for me, because I would listen to the, and I would hear these chords, and I'd listen to these changes that I had heard, like I said before, bless you. Hi. And I had never kind of thought of them, because I always, like we talked before, it's always buried by great vocals by Dionne Warwick. And I get it now. I get why he's doing it. Is I want you to hear the music, you know, not the denigrating what, you know, how the official version goes, but I want you to hear the music, because it's pretty cool too, you know. And it is the changes and the time signatures, which, you know, I'm a big fan of, because I change time signatures in a lot of my songs, pisses people off, and I don't do it on purpose. It's just the way it comes out of my head. This should speed up a little bit halfway through, and people go, "Fuck, you don't do that." And I said, "Sorry, that's how I hear it." Just like you do too.
This one skips a beat at the end of this bar.
Yes, it's just how I hear it, and that's how he does it too. But he's more of a trained musician. But there's just things I could go on and on. There's just things like bringing in the horns at the right place and then taking them up.
Yep.
And then putting this in at a certain place with the strings, and then taking them up. And I was so intellectually stimulated by it. Yes, it's easy listening, but I hate those words, because I didn't find it easy listening. I found it intellectually listening.
I went into it expecting easy listening and expecting not to like it. I got surprised. I even on the first listen, I was like, okay, I know I'm not going to like it. Listen to the sounds. These are not my sounds.
And yet, you could play this at that time. Times have so changed that a 40-year-old now is like listening to AC/DC and all that stuff, classic rock, and they're not listening to this. But at the time, 40-year-old people were listening to this type of stuff, easy listening. There was a generational gap. You could play this in a background for like a 42-year-old at that time, and it would be great background music. Plus, I could listen to it, or you could listen to it and be intellectually stimulated by the many changes, the smarts of it, the lowering of the music to the point of like it's a fade. Like, there's so many things to admire as a aficionado of music, and there's things to admire just as easy listening background music. That alone is an accomplishment. I think he's much underrated. I think this album is much... I never had heard of this album before, because it's so under the radar, because it was never intended for worldwide release. It should be one of the albums that Burt Bacharach should be known by. And he's released like 20, 30 albums. This should be near the top of the list, along with his greatest hits. I seriously think that. I think these songs should be heard like this to appreciate Burt Bacharach. And, of course, they should be heard in their hit sense as how great these two songwriters were. But I love him expressing himself. Yes, his vocals on Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head are really rough. It does sound exactly like a songwriter presenting it to the singer. This is how it goes, you know. He sounds awkward when he talks. Like he's that songwriter that shouldn't be out there, but he is. So it's endearing, because you feel for him. And it's hard to feel for him, because he's a good-looking guy who could seem
really
to get
freaking talented.
And he's talented, and he can get any woman he wants. But when he's on that stage, he acts so goofy. You know what I mean? Like, he acts so out of place.
Yeah, but you know, he's so good, he can do it.
I know, that's the point. He's so good, he can do it. And I just want to say, I said, you know, that I love Bond Street, by the way. You're right. I loved every song on here. I did. I loved almost, I look at them and I can't think of one song I didn't like. But I really liked, speaking of the three songs he sang, I think his vocals on a song that really got to me emotionally, which is A House Is Not a Home, his kind of rough vocals made that song, because it's kind of a rough song. It's a song about, you know, a house is more than just, it needs a person there. It's just furniture. And a home is when you have people that, you know, you're not just alone. You have people that care for you. And it
kind of in a house.
And you live in a house, I know that. And I just found that his vocals suited that so well. And some things, you know, I don't know, I really liked. I don't want to get into like maybe this, because it's a long record too. It's for a live record and only two sides. You know, it's like 50 minutes long or 45 minutes long or whatever. And most of it being instrumental, it's long, but I was constantly attracted to play this record. So like all the time, like it was like, geez, I'd like to hear that record today because it's so intoxicating. And I want to put one more comment that really, and I was wondering if Rob would pick up on it, but on the look of love, mm-hmm. which has this, it starts off with this very pedestrian bass line of like, dum, 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 dum. Like the look, dum, dum,
of love. Dum. Of that was a really dum, dum. A 70s bass sound.
And it was really cool, but it was very, very simple. But then it gets to the, what we would call, I guess, it would be the end of the song. It would be what we would call a fade out, but it doesn't fade out. It plays for about 45 seconds, and then it ends. And the bass part is one of the most unbelievable bass parts I've ever heard in a top 40 song. It goes from that beginning, which plays for about 3 minutes, dum dum, look of love, dum dum, very simple. I could do it. I'm not a bass player. Then it goes in, and I can't even remember. See, I should have listened to it before. I forgot about this part, but I can't remember what it goes. And it's a part. It's an actual part written. But it's amazing. And the guy has about 5 seconds, part? Maybe 8 seconds to play this part. It speeds up and builds in momentum. So I know it goes, and he has to play like, and it's just like, what the fuck, in a song that is a top 40 song, and it's got this written amazingly complicated bass line. I'm going, and you didn't have to do that. You know, you didn't. You could have just ended it with doo-dum-doo-dum, you know. And I was going like, that's fucking smart. You know, I like people who don't fall back. Like we talked last episode about with Gordon Lightfoot doing things that he didn't have to do, but he did because it made the song more interesting. He could have just done the same thing he did after the first chorus. Just like with this, with Burt Bacharach, and I find this so many times, he could have easily gone back into something else, but instead he decided to do something more adventurous or just different than what had happened before. Like, he didn't have to put that bass part, make it really difficult, but it was so fucking cool. And I was just in awe of this album.
I was in awe because I liked it.
I don't. And I know. And I'm in awe of it for many reasons, but I just liked it. And I liked it so much, I just wanted to hear it all the time. And I was surprised because, I mean, it's classified easy listening. And it is, but I don't know.
It's for us too smart to fully be easy listening.
Smart listening.
Yeah.
Stu, that's a very good... and they have listening. It under Discogs, that you would hate this, but they have it under jazz. Yeah. They have the genre jazz, which is not... I'm telling you, Rob is 100% right. It's not jazz. And they have the style of easy listening, which is kind of true, but I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't know what it is. All I know is you can call it whatever you want. I just think it's brilliant music, and I don't think people understand how brilliant it is, because most of his listeners are listening to his background music, which is such a shame, because when listeners like me and Rob listen to it, we hear so much in it.
I love his chords.
Yeah, I love his chords. I love the changes. That's the thing. I love his chords. I love the changes. I love the dynamics, and I love the time changes. The little things that people don't really notice about songs. They listen for melody and stuff. But the things that I really love about songwriting and how a song is put together are all in his songs. And I give it a strong 4 stars. And I'm going to be listening to this album once in a while for the rest of my life, I think. I just loved it.
I gave it 4 stars, too, for just the... partially for enjoying it, but all partially for how well done it was. He did a concert, and as near as I can tell, this is just perfect.
Very good comment. You know what?
I heard
this
no
is about as perfect as a concert you can get.
I heard no bad notes, no bad songs, nothing. It has a complete lack of bad things.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at it. Looking at it, and I was trying to pinpoint. I was trying to say there's nothing wrong in this record, but then I didn't want some smart ass going, there's nothing wrong with this record, why didn't you give it 5 stars? Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking of.
Nothing wrong with it. It's there's nothing negative to the ear.
I can't describe why there's nothing wrong with this record, and I like every song, but I give it 4 stars. It's a gut thing, and it just comes from a lot of listening to records that you know it's not a 5-star record for reasons that sometimes you can't put into words. It's just a gut thing.
It is for a select taste, I think.
Yes.
There's a bunch of people who won't appreciate it because they're just not going to give it the chance to... It's not what they appreciate. Yeah, that's it.
You know, that's the sad part about it, is that if this was an album not for the easy listening crowd and it was done for a rock crowd and it had a rock following, then this album would be fawned over. And I think Burt Bacharach's career as a solo artist would be much more than just negligated to, oh, I didn't know he recorded solo albums.
I only knew of him as a...
See, even you didn't. And I find
songwriter. First time I saw him actually play something was the Austin Powers there. When he,
mm-hmm. He did that with Elvis Costello, and that that was also a thing that reinvigorated his love for music.
I saw him on a biography years ago when he was like at the piano, but he was just talking about the songs and... at times presenting them to musicians. There wasn't any live performances there.
I love to hear Burt Bacharach talk, because if there's something I like about a musician, and I know we've heaped praise on him for like 40 minutes here, but he's also the kind of musician I really like when he may not play my type of music as far as the type of music I listen to all the time, but he's very open to it, like Elvis Costello. It's just one example. He's very open and always has been to all types of music. Yeah. He's not like these people who play easy listening. And all these people we grew up watching on like the Tonight Show and all these fucking shows where they never had rock and roll on it, even though that was what was selling all throughout the world. And there was still, I'm not knowing lame names, but you know, the Steve Lawrences and the... you know, because I don't want to name somebody who was actually in favor of it, but even Frank Sinatra was not. You know, these people who, you know, and Dean Martin, who made fun of rock and roll, even though I love Dean Martin, they always like, the only music is ours. You know, and I don't listen to any of that crap that the kids play because it's bullshit. Burt Bacharach was so open to all music. If it was intellectually stimulating to him, he loved it. And that's what I like about a musician. That's even something I don't like about Frank Zappa, is that he was, as much as I love Frank, he loved putting down everything that wasn't him. And I love people that, especially people who don't listen to the music that I do, but they do, and they go, that's not bad, that's pretty smart. And it's the people that close their ears and say, I only listen to what I like. That's not how you grow. That's how you keep on playing songs from the 30s and 40s. Yeah. You know, and we see that nowadays with bands who just play music from the 80s. I know.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be embracing a new musical style that I genuinely didn't like, but you know, at least give it a listen. Give it a listen. Make sure you don't like it first.
Don't just because you haven't heard it before, just don't say you don't like it, is what we're saying. Man, we have long shows and it doesn't seem like I'm taking out things right and left, and it's still long
we
shows.
We can't shorten the shows.
You know, we can't shorten the shows any more than we do. It's just that the albums we do are so fascinating.
And they're just going to get worse, which means better.
Yeah, I know what you mean. People may not know what you mean, but I do. So that's our episode for this week. We both gave Brit Bacharach 4 stars for Alive in Japan. Really a record that I think anybody can enjoy. I don't see why anybody
if
wouldn't.
I enjoyed it.
Then anybody can yes. enjoy it. Technically, we will be taking a week off from putting a show up next week. We will be working next week. But we're so screwed up schedule-wise because of the move that we will not be putting up a show, but we will be working. You don't need to know about the will be working part. I just put that in to show you that we care too much.
We're playing catch-up on our end.
And not ketchup with the ketchup.
Not,
but ketchup.
We're not the red tomato-based condiment. No, sir.
This is where we go, boop. We had sound effects.
Daniel Hines.
So we will be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Almost like 2 days for us.
Almost
but
like
2 weeks.
Wow.
With another episode and more hilarity and sadness, depending on how you like our show. Oh, no, they're on again. Damn it. So until then, everybody, take care and stay safe. Just right or wrong. Yuckity sex.
I don't talk back.